After the commissioner's blunt refusal, is there anything else that can be done by anyone? Is time running out for KRWG? Will the FCC change its minds by 3 p.m. Sunday, September 6th, 1970? Tune in and find out. Tune in and hear Harold Service at the foot of the new tower say...
Missed the next episode, KRWG-FM did sign on successfully September 6th.
KRWG is in the basement of Milton Hall, where the acoustics are poor, the carpet wearing out, the air conditioning working better in January than July, a shortage of space for work and for storing tapes and records, pipes in the ceiling that leak, doors that stick, and trash that blows in when barn-born students take shortcuts through the building.
School was out on the evening of June 4th, 1968, but Jim Hastings, student station manager from Anthony, New Mexico, volunteered to stay on the extra time and do the Late Late Show. His program was interrupted with this broadcast from the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles, California.
I thank all of you who made this possible this evening, all of the effort that you made, and all of the people whose names I haven't mentioned, but who did all of the work at the precinct level, who got out the vote, who did all of the effort, brought forth all of the effort that's required. I was a campaign manager 8 years ago. I know what a difference that kind of an effort and that kind of commitment makes. So I thank all of you. Those of you who are here. Mayor Yorty has just sent me a message that we've been here too long already. So my thanks to all of you, and now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there. Thank you very much.
I'm going to counter Mr. Humphreys and his backgrounding you as far as the delegate votes go.
You can just go with Dr. Struggleboard.
Senator Kennedy has been shot. Is that possible? Is that possible? It's good. Is it possible, ladies and gentlemen? It is possible. He has... Not only Senator Kennedy, oh my God, Senator Kennedy has been shot, and another man, a Kennedy campaign manager, and possibly shot in the head. I am right here. Rafer Johnson has a hold of a man who apparently has fired the shot. He has fired the shot. He still has the gun. The gun is pointed at me right at this moment. I hope they can get the gun out of his hand. Be very careful. Get the gun. Get the gun. Get the gun. Stay away from the gun. Stay away from the gun. His hand is frozen. Take a hold of his thumb and break it if you have to. Get his thumb. All right. That's it, Rafer. Get it. Get the gun, Rafer. Hold him. Hold him. Hold him. We don't want another Oswald.
Has anybody there? Can you tell me where he's gone? I thought I saw him walking up over the hill with Abraham back.
KRWG is the best world news coverage available anywhere, presenting news from ABC Radio, National Public Radio, the Mutual Broadcasting System, United Press International, Associated Press, and dozens of other taped and transcribed sources.
Motion picture instructor Professor Orville Wanzer has been one of KRWG's best supporters and listeners, and was even on the air himself in the early days.
Recently, he has been actively obtaining grants for the station to purchase new opera recordings.
We progress so rapidly and so quickly and have all this marvelous equipment, wonderful radio station now. It's almost comic to think back to the early days. Perhaps the first thing I can remember offhand was Harvey Jacobs, who was our department head at the time, and that was a rather strange title in that he and I were the only ones in the department. Harvey insisted we stay on over the Christmas holidays, and we all pointed out to him that, you know, students go home on Christmas holidays and there wouldn't be anyone here, and he insisted we'd work it out. Well, we find it in the working it out that over the Christmas holidays he was on for, I believe, 2 hours, I was on for an hour and a half, and his older son Phil was on for 2 hours, and that was our radio station for the Christmas holidays. Another particular evening I can remember was a student calling me, I would guess around 9 o'clock at night, and we had our evening concert in stereo, which was what we felt was our strongest show. We still think it's one of our best shows. And a student calling me up at 9 o'clock and saying that he had an evening of Beethoven to play, and he could find only one Beethoven record in our collection, which was awfully sparse. And I had to rush over in the middle of the night with records from my own collection to give him something to play that evening. I think possibly the funniest thing that ever happened on a radio station was the fact that we never could get students to do FM of their own free will. I think John Athey was probably the first student who loved serious music and therefore worked FM. The other students all were interested in being AM jocks. But in order to be an AM jock, we forced them to do a stint on FM. Well, of course, this was okay because they could introduce a classical record and then read their assignments for class or something during the length of the symphony or something. But, of course, the the worst problem was to hear them try to handle names like Shostakovich and Prokofiev and many of the Russian names and the French names and what have you. I think probably, I don't know whether John would be embarrassed by my reminiscing, but when John first came to us and had never done this before, and of course was caught off guard, though he had a great love for the music, first night he was on, he announced one of Prokofiev's symphonies, and both Harvey and I were listening, and we had two lines into the studio at the time, and he announced it as Prokofiev. Harvey and I both hit the phones at the same time, both called them at the same time. He answered both phones at the same time and was getting chewed out in both ears at the same time. So it may be good because I think John immediately took that to heart and went on to be the mainstay of our FM classical music programming. Each year we've improved considerably until I think we've got a good, slick, high-class educational radio station.
KRWG is a classroom with the public listening in. Students are learning on the air. Mistakes are made, corrected, and attempts made again. The equipment used is very complicated, but learn they do and move on to commercial broadcasting or other forms of journalism.
Everyone knows the impeccable standards which KRWG-FM maintains on pronunciation of classical names.
For our next selection on Afternoon Classics, we will hear Mozart's Marriage of Figaro, Bruno Walter conducting the Columbia Symphony Orchestra.
Next on Afternoon Classics, we'll be listening to Night on Bald Mountain by Mussorgsky, as from the album Favorite Selections from Fantasia.
Next on Afternoon Classics, we'll hear Scratch a Haiti by Rimsky's Korkizov. Andrei Previn conducts the Lenin Symphony Orchestra.
And now on Afternoon Classics, we'll listen to Raspaghetti's Pines of Rome.
Of course, Afternoon Classics has other problems. For example, Kim Hunter.
Thank you.
Afternoon Classics, we will hear Bach's Prelude and Fugue, number 19 in A major, and Bach's Prelude and Fugue, number 20 in A minor. Glenn Gould, pianist.
Of course, during Afternoon Classics, we're forced to deal with the newscasts.
This has been the 1,000 voice of public radio for the Southwest, KRWG.
The weather outlook for the Las Cruces area: for the Middle Rio Grande Valley and Central and Southwestern Valleys, partly cloudy tonight and tomorrow, with occasional gusty winds tomorrow afternoon. Variable cloudiness and windy tomorrow night, less Wednesday on Thursday. For Las Cruces, the low tonight should be 37, high tomorrow 62, low tomorrow night 39. The present temperature in Las Cruces is 50 degrees. This has been news from ABC and KRWG.
Weather-wise for Las Cruces and the Mesilla Valley: fair this morning, moderately windy and warmer this afternoon. Scattered high, little cloudies, scattered with little chance of rain tonight. Tomorrow, gusty southwesterly winds of 20 to 35 miles per hour with widely scattered afternoon thundershowers.
Election nights are the very best laboratories in NMSU's Department of Journalism and Mass Communications because students must apply everything their instructors have taught them: news writing, engineering, taping, timing, immediacy, accuracy, dedication, stamina, editing, ad-libbing, interviewing, adding in the head while on live mic. Everyone has his job and is an important link in a long chain right to the listener's radio. Election nights have been the most fun at KRWG. The students have always really pulled together, and the public reacts favorably with our quick reporting of all races and complete coverage from the three networks and two wire services, plus the computer at Physical Science Laboratory and the reporters at the precincts and county clerk's office. The coverage has become a tradition at the station and turns into a sort of working party where everyone has a good time and does a superb job. Work begins weeks, even months in advance for election night reporting. On election night, November 6, 1968, the students began coverage at 5 p.m. and fully expected to go on working long past midnight and then go home to collapse. The station never left the air that night. The students worked on through the next morning, missing sleep, food, and classes, but finally it was over, shortly before noon.
I saw many signs in this campaign. Some of them were not friendly. Some were very friendly. But the one that touched me the most was one that I saw in Destler, Ohio, at the end of a long day of whistle stopping. A little town, I suppose five times the population, was there in the dust. It was almost impossible to see, but a teenager held up the sign, "Bring us together." And that will be the great objective of this administration at the outset, to bring the American people together.
KRWG-FM is 100,000 watts in stereo, the voice of New Mexico State University, 90.7 megahertz on the FM dial in Las Cruces, New Mexico.
Dr. Paul Rader was vice president in charge of development here at NMSU during the 1960s. He has also been one of the station's very best supporters and listeners. General Manager Harold Service interviewed him for tonight's anniversary broadcast.
I'm talking with Paul Rader, former Vice President of Development at New Mexico State University, and who had a great deal to do with KRWG-FM while he was here. Paul, maybe you could tell us a bit about your own recollections of the station and maybe its impact on the university and the community.
Very happy to, Harold. The way to begin this, I suppose, is to perhaps put the history of the radio station here somewhat in the context of the history of educational radio itself, which has been a rather precarious and stormy history, as you are well aware of. I think it's interesting that this university was a pioneer, really, in radio. If we look back to the early days of KOB, the educational radio in the United States, of course, really, I suppose, had its origins, and this may be perhaps exaggerating the issue a little bit, but I suppose one would fairly have to say that Chicago in the 1930s was the center of educational radio activities, if indeed there was a center. And that was particularly interesting because Chicago in the late 20s and early 30s wasn't known for its educational advantages. More the Valentine's Day Massacre, perhaps, but not so much educational radio. It seemed to me that it was going to take forever for educational radio, and as far as that goes, educational television, really to come westward. Of course, there was some abortive efforts at it in California in the early 1950s or late 1940s. The educational television days certainly arose from and for a great period of time was a captive of the educational radio development. There were many of us who despaired of ever seeing educational television mature in this country because of the control of those villainous educational radio people out of Chicago who wanted to control the whole thing. We used to call educational television radio with drapes. You remember that very well. So this was part of the colorful beginnings, but I say I had despaired of seeing educational broadcasting services come westward, but very hopeful that this university, which of course was very close to my heart, would find some manner in which to recreate the splendid radio environment that it had back in the late 1920s and early 1930s. KRWG has developed into a leadership station, and although it by no means is the oldest educational radio station in this part of the world, I would suspect that it's probably had more innovative values and more leadership values than almost any other one I can think of.
What kind of an impact do you think that the station is both, because I know you're a loyal fan of ours as well, that has had on the community the time that you've been here?
I think the impact has been considerable. It's, by and large, a rather silent audience. That's the misfortune of it. It's not a rock and roll audience that quite often will translate its excitement about a program or the existence of the station itself through various ways, including going out and buying large numbers of records and things of this kind. The audience for KRWG has been basically, I think, a steadily growing audience. It's been one of the manifestations of a kind of sociological change here in the Mesilla Valley. I suspect, and I don't want to be unfair, but I suspect it's a 1950. There would have been very few people who had the desire to spend any period of time listening to what something called educational radio. We had basically agriculturally oriented people here, commercially oriented people who, I would not say that they're not uncultured, I'm just saying that their cultural backgrounds really didn't encourage any kind of receptivity to this sort of station. I think it was brave, as a matter of fact, when KRWG was launched on the air with an educational format, hoping, as all these stations must hope, because if they're going to get, as you say, large-scale support from national sources, they have to prove that they have an audience, and an audience beyond the immediate confines of the university family. So the growing audience, and I don't know how many polls you've taken, or I don't think probably any poll that you could take would be very successful, as I say, because this is a basically non-demonstrating group that we are getting to with the station. But I find, just in my own movements around the community, a surprising number of people who are aware, of, not only aware of the station, but do listen to it with some continuity, and who are certainly very much aware of special programs that come on. And so I think this is all very encouraging.
Well, I might add, Paul, for not only your edification, but for the audience as well, we have gotten a new ARB survey from Corporation for Public Broadcasting just a few weeks ago, and it gave a survey of our audience, and it's surprisingly large, and particularly with the people over 30. We have nobody in teenage bracket, a very minuscule audience. So it was surprisingly in the survey that the audience, particularly in the El Paso area, has been particularly strong. So we do have now for the first time a relatively broad survey that we ourselves would never be able to undertake, because this was funded under the CPB in Washington, you know, that took them for all the educational stations. So we're rather pleased with the results.
Well, I'm very gratified to hear that. And the assumption I would make that you do have a very large audience, and the fact that you've been able to monitor it or measure it is very good. I think that what this audience is enjoying, and I think that they probably are very grateful for it, is a much enlarged panorama radio service that has been managed in various ways by the station over the, certainly over the past 3 or 4 years. Your various, very good program series, and also news and information programs coming out of public radio in Washington and New York and so forth, I think has brought a very splendid new dimension to the radio station here. And I've heard people certainly wax very enthusiastic about some of the news and information in depth kinds of programs that we simply do not get anymore on radio. We get them sometimes in an alarming way on through television commentators, particularly when they're monitoring large national events. We get a lot of personal opinion, or closely watched personal opinion from commentators, but to have several relatively influential or knowledgeable people sit down and discuss issues on the radio so that you can participate in a sense with them, certainly in listening, is a new experience, I think, for many people in this part of the world who have not had the advantage of a lot of local talk and discussion radio programs around in the larger cities. I think that the station, from my point of view personally, is one that has its own personality. Now, every educational radio station in the country follows to some degree the same format. They have the same national services, and they have to some degree the same kinds of local programs. However, KRWG to me has a distinct personality. I think part of it is because of the kinds of people who are involved, and I think people who have been very faithful to the development of the station, certainly yourself included, have put a certain kind of imprint on the station that makes it not only different from many stations in the country, but I think perhaps one of the most outstanding ones. I've heard good things about the station from various parts of the country, people who are knowledgeable about educational broadcasting. Certainly once Harvey Jacobs broke through the barrier of understanding in Washington about what a truly professional student-operated station was all about, then there was a lot of begrudging admissions of admiration for programs that had originated from KRWG. Once they found out that they were student programs, of course, the first reaction was, well, probably they weren't as good as we thought they were. But once they were convinced that students could produce materials and produce materials well, then I think they relaxed a little bit and have been extremely complimentary about this station.
It's a new, exciting form of education for Las Cruces school children, both public and parochial, who have been raised with TV, movies, books, magazines, and other forms of visual stimuli.
Las Cruces was nearly a ghost town on Sunday, July 20th, 1969. Most listeners were probably in front of their TV sets. But undaunted, KRWGFM broadcast Neil Armstrong and Edwin Aldrin's landing on the moon and first moonwalk. Student FM program director James Short brought his portable TV set from home, placed it next to the turntables, and watched history being made on TV just like everyone else. But just maybe there was someone out there listening to KRWGFM who had no TV. Nevertheless, radio was there.
Contact light. Okay, engine stop. ATA at a descent. Mode control, both auto, descent engine command override off. Engine arm on.
We're home.
413 is in.
Man on the moon.
We copy you down, Eagle.
Listen,
oh, jeez.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue.
Okay, Houston, I'm on the porch.
Roger, Neil.
I'm at the foot of the ladder. The lamb footbeds are only depressed in the surface about 1 or 2 inches, although the surface appears to be very, very fine-grained as you get close to it. It's almost like a powder down there. It's very fine. I'm going to step off the land now. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
John Athey was on Evening Concert in Stereo, playing Bizet's Carmen, on April 13, 1970. At 10:30, he canceled the program and went live to ABC for special all-night coverage. Like many other radio and TV stations that night across the country, many listeners called and complained that regular programming was canceled. But at the station, the staff held its collective breath and heard those now famous words.
Okay, we've had a problem here.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Houston, we've had a problem. Looks to me, looking out the hatch, that we are venting something. We are venting something out into space.
Roger, we copy your venting.
That explosion in the service module threatened to cut off the supply of oxygen in Odyssey, the command ship. Jack Swigert to Jack Luzma in Houston.
Does it look like it's still going down?
It's slowly going to zero, and we're starting to think about the Lamb lifeboat.
Yeah, that's what we're thinking about, too.
The men of NASA became one big rescue party. At Mission Control, Terry White explained their decision.
The increased load on fuel cell 2 and the dropping pressure in the remaining liquid oxygen tank led to the decision to use the lunar module for a sort of lifeboat to come back to Earth using its consumables for life support.
So the Aquarius moon ship would go round the moon, would become a lifeboat headed for Earth instead of a moon lander.
We've mentioned people's size tonight on the program. Ed Sweena is little. Generally, that wouldn't be of much interest, but that characteristic qualified Ed to ride in a grocery cart all the way to El Paso one year, not too long ago, when he was still a student. In 1968, Colin Gromatsky, student station manager, told a staff meeting that he was pushed in a grocery cart while working at a station in Arizona. The occasion was a fundraising drive where listeners gave money for every mile other station announcers pushed Colin. The idea was adapted by KRWG AM and FM. KRWG challenged the University of Texas at El Paso, radio stations KVOF and KTEP FM, to a race. Both schools would start out from their respective campuses and push to the other's school. The first team to reach the other's radio station would be declared the winner. Announcers would push their lightest DJ in an ordinary grocery cart down the highway on foot until the mileage between El Paso and Las Cruces was accomplished. Now you know where Ed Sweena, KRWG-FM's assistant news director, comes in.
I was a student then, and yes, I was one of the select underweights who had the dubious distinction of riding the 45 miles from Las Cruces to El Paso in a grocery cart. I have here some tapes that may bring back a few memories from May of 1968, the very first race.
This is John Athey, and I'm speaking to you right now from a phone booth out on the old El Paso Highway. Right now, I cannot see them. I'm far ahead of the push cart. They are probably about a mile back from Mesquite. Right now, we're having a lot of difficulty because we only have about six or seven cart pushers, and we were expecting at least 10. And for the students on campus who are connected with KRWG or the journalism department, we would appreciate your help, as we understand at this time UTEP is ahead of us, and they have, and this is all we've heard, about 30 people pushing their cart, and we're stuck with something like six or seven. So if you can, and you will, get out here with your car, just follow the highway down the old El Paso route. You can't miss them, they're blocking traffic, and there's a cop car with a blinking signal. I'll try and give to you now, if I can, I don't know, with the trucks going by and everything, kind of a sample of what it sounds like.
Right now we're stopping for a water break. Everyone's taking a drink of water. Now the girls are pushing it. Nancy McElfresh is pushing along with Lorraine Riviera. Well, I think what I'll do is just let my tape recorder run and we'll listen to what some of this sounds like. The object of the game is to pick up...
Get rid of it, Bob! Don't try two guys out!
Pick up the students as they drop off and carry them back around front again where they start pushing the cart. Then I pick up the guy who we relieve in my car and, the car is empty, I think, except for, who's Colin? Colin's driving, right. We have two cars.
Okay, bye. Hey, hold it. Not both of us. Hold it. We're both getting out. Gary, get back in. I'll push. I'll have
in. Push.
All right, hold on.
Stop. All right. Keep going.
Well, that's what it sounds like out here on the El Paso Road. So we'll keep you in touch.
And then toward the end of the race came the fateful news.
This is Dick Jones of KRWG in the grocery cart push. At last check, we're about 2 2/10 miles out of El Paso, and everyone's about dead. Literally dead.
Hold on.
Well, we just heard on K-Grate that we lost by 10 minutes.
10 minutes? Yeah. Well, it was close, man.
Yeah. Wow. What happened to you?
I fell out of the ambulance, John.
My shirt's in the ambulance.
Uh-oh. Then Cliff Hotvet fell out of the back of the car. Not mine. No, it wasn't mine. Oh. No, it was the blue one. Blue station wagon.
Not mine.
Out of Mike O'Keefe's.
Mike O'Keefe was the man riding in the grocery cart then. Colin Gromadsky was the student station manager then, and he spoke for all the KRWG staff. Renee Castillo anchored that special report.
I personally want to congratulate each and every one of them. They did a fine job, and we want to thank you at the station for doing a good job of keeping the city of Las Cruces informed on our push.
Well, it was a long race. Colin, Mr. Hicks, the head of the department, I think, of the University of Texas at El Paso, head of the Department of Journalism, said that there was talk around that maybe this could become an annual affair. Now, what is your reaction to that?
Could. I think that right at the moment, you might not ask them because everybody's tired and I don't think they want to push anything. We don't even want to go home. We want to sit down and just rest. So I think that's what we'll do. But I think that, as you say, an annual affair would be wonderful. I think it'd be great, and we'll beat them next year.
But again, it was a long race.
There's the group.
That's the way it sounded to our KRWG listeners back in 1968. Things went pretty much the same the next year. I was one of the pushers then, 1969. We had three races with UTEP's student station, KVOF, before we decided it was too dangerous. I rode the last race in 1970, and indeed it was dangerous, not only for the pushers, but for the push-E as well. When I rode, I was dumped twice, by the same guy, I believe. I was lucky to be wearing a motorcycle helmet. The second time I was dumped right onto the highway, and I shudder to remember the 2 or 3 inch gash that in that headgear, about half an inch deep. It was something else. By the way, we won that last race.
In 1971, a lot of bulletins interrupted programs and seemed ridiculous at the time. I mean, who cares if ping pong players are going to Red China? It was worse than the bulletins on the condition of President Johnson's cold a few years before. It became clear on July 15, 1971, when during a presidential address, Richard Nixon read a communique that was to change the shape of future U.S., Red China-Taiwan relations.
Premier Chou En-lai and Dr. Henry Kissinger, President Nixon's assistant for national security affairs, held talks in Peking from July 9 to 11, 1971. Knowing of President Nixon's expressed desire to visit the People's Republic of China, Premier Chou En-lai, on behalf of the government of the People's Republic of China, has extended an invitation to President Nixon to visit China at an appropriate date before May 1972. President Nixon has accepted the invitation with pleasure. The meeting between the leaders of China and the United States is to seek the normalization of relations between the two countries and also to exchange views on questions of concern to the two sides.
In 1971, KRWG-FM added the affiliation of National Public Radio and spent an entire day broadcasting the unseating of Taiwan and the ceding of Red China. Students and staff spent the day telling each other that the UN was finished. The move on the part of the General Assembly was illegal by their own constitution. The broadcast was embarrassing because when Taiwan was voted out, some members of the UN danced in the aisles, shouted derogatory remarks to the leaving representatives, and applauded loudly at the removal of a strong-willed little nation that dared stand up against the red giant with an economy that rivals some of the nations in the UN. It was a day to be ashamed of being the host nation for the United Nations.
The result of the voting is as follows: in favor 76, opposed 35, abstention 17. The draft resolution adopted. The resolution is adopted. The government of People's Republic of China will be notified accordingly.
KRWG-FM is a public radio station. There are no commercials. We do promote people and their projects. Anyone can promote a cause or make a request of this station.
Harold Service is the station's third general manager. He gave up the blackboard jungle of Silver High School in Silver City, New Mexico, for a life of peace and quiet here at KRWG.
I've seen a lot of changes at KRWG-FM since I've been there. And the trials and tribulations of running a university station is somewhat appalling at times. And it's funny or it's serious. I've threatened sometime in my declining years to write a book, which I've already picked the title for it, From Crisis to Crisis, because I never know when I either leave the station or that I'm going to get a phone call that something has happened, that there's been a riot or that somebody has been locked out of a studio or something of that kind. I've been here 6 years, and when I first came here, we were in the old barracks over back of the business administration building. In fact, it's not even a complete barracks because they had to cut off a portion of it when they built the new Business Administration building. And everything was over there. The department, the journalism department was there, the motion pictures, radio, the closed circuit TV. And it was unbelievably small in relation to what we are today, expanding in Milton Hall, covering most of two floors. And I've seen the station go from 1,000 watts when I first came here, and a year after I came, we went to 2,500 watts. And then when we moved here to Milton Hall, it went to 100,000 watt stereo. And I've certainly seen the changes in equipment from a very modest amount of equipment when we were in the old barracks to probably one of the best equipped educational stations, certainly in this part of the country. And the fine thing about this, that it's most of it's done by students that are certainly devoted to radio. We have certainly a small paid staff, but mostly it's students, either in relation to classwork they're doing, or it's just because they enjoy working in radio. There's one thing that an educational station can do, that we can offer programs to special groups, small groups that a commercial station could not program to because of the fact that they couldn't get sponsors. So if we have people that like jazz or classical programs, and of course the classical program category is probably one of our biggest claim to fame, because we have certainly most of our devoted listeners in El Paso and here are listening to the classical program that's at 8:30 in the evening, the concert in stereo. We're able to offer the live hearings, for example, the Senate hearings, the impeachment hearings, and so on, from gavel to gavel coverage that enables people, certainly if they wish to listen continuously, or we can listen to it a while and can come back to it. But it's something, again, that commercial radio or television cannot offer, cost-wise. We're also beginning this season, for the second year, the live broadcast from the Metropolitan Opera in New York. And this has been something that we've been trying to get for some time, and finally have been able to do this for our listening audience. We offer bilingual programs, both in the area of news or special interests for the schools. And I think another thing that's certainly very important, that there have been a number of listeners that have provided special funds for records and special program series. And without devoted listeners of that kind, we wouldn't be able to offer some of the special programs that we do. And these special gifts certainly are very appreciated and certainly always welcome, and might also add they are tax deductible. We offer programs for the Las Cruces Public Schools, primarily in the elementary and junior high area, but we do offer programs that are of interest to high school age and university age. And at one time we offered a course, in fact one that I taught, Journalism 100, taught by radio, which was the Introduction to Mass Communications, taught by radio for university credit, and I taught it primarily for the inmates at Latuna Federal Prison. And I think some of the things that make radio continually interesting and I guess never boring, some of the humorous things that happened, there was a student leaning back in his chair in one of the studios one time, and he was on the air, and in leaning back, the microphone was open, and all was heard was a agonized yell and then some unprintable oaths before he could turn the mic off when he got up off the floor. And, of course, things like announcers locking themselves out of studios. Had an announcer, a doorknob came off the handle that he couldn't get in. There was one that there was no key to the newsroom, so there was no news. And sometimes an announcer, in leaving a studio and neglects to come back or forgets to come back or something, and you hear that agonizing playing of the label for 4 or 5 minutes. But this is the place that announcers have an opportunity to begin. And going from beginning announcers to certainly announcers that have a very professional sound.